So in our last class, we started lesson four. And we started off talking about Ahab, king of Israel. He was the son of Omri. And remember what it stated about Omri in 1 Kings 16:25. It said that he did evil in the sight of the Lord and acted more wickedly than all who were before him. I mentioned that we seem to be seeing a progression. So that was stated about Omri. And then, like his father, you see what is stated about Ahab. But there's more. In verse 28, that's in chapter 16, we're in 1 Kings 16. In verse 28, it's where it starts mentioning Ahab. And it just starts talking about him. Not even much detail about him yet. It's just saying the fact that, you know, he took his father's place as king. And I just want us to note that that's verse 28. And then in 29, it gives some time stamps. Let's read verse 29. It says, "Now Ahab, the son of Omri, became king over Israel in the 38th year of Asa, king of Judah. And Ahab, the son of Omri, reigned over Israel and Samaria 22 years." So, verse 28, we see just a little about him. 29 starts giving us a little time details. And then we have verse 30. Says, "Ahab the son of Omri did evil in the sight of the Lord more than all who were before him." Does it sound familiar? That's what it kind of ended with when it was talking about his father. But here we are in the third verse about him, and it's already bringing this up. So we see this idea that he did more evil than those that were before him. So, and it also talks about who he married and Jezebel, and we spoke about her a little bit in class and what she came from and this influence she brings. And let's read verse 33. In verse 33 of chapter 16. It says that Ahab also made the Asherah. Thus Ahab did more to provoke the Lord God of Israel than all the kings of Israel who were before him. So, and that was the idea I was seeing. We saw that when it talked about Omri, that he did more evil than those before him. And then we see that the same is said about Ahab. So we have this progression, this evil that's just continuing, and at this point it's growing. So Ahab, we know, was, from what I can tell, the worst king. And then, so we have him introduced here, and then we're going to start in chapter 17, we're going to start seeing Elijah the prophet introduced. We're going to see him, and as we mentioned, we'll see him in chapter 17, 18, 19, not in 20, and then 21, and then some other chapters in 2 Kings on. But we'll start to see quite a bit about Elijah. And in verse 1 of chapter 17... This is where it said, "Now Elijah the Tishbite, who was of the settlers of Gilead, said to Ahab, 'As the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, before whom I stand, surely there shall be neither dew nor rain these years, except by my word.'" So we talked about this drought. And then we saw how the Lord provided for Elijah during this time, during this drought. It said that first we saw that God commands the animals. He commanded the ravens to provide for him. And then the brook would be the source of water. But then when the brook dries up, then God provides a different way. We saw in 17:9 that he provided, or he commanded a widow to provide for him. And then we noted in our last class, or we ended the class basically, with Elijah, the widow's son dies, and then Elijah calls on the Lord, and then we see what takes place from there. Let's look at 17, verse 20. That's chapter 17, verse 20. It says, he called on the Lord and said, O Lord my God, have you also brought calamity to the widow with whom I am staying by causing her son to die? Then he stretched himself upon the child three times and called to the Lord and said, O Lord my God, I pray you, let this child's life return to him. So he's asking of the Lord to bring this child back. Verse 22 says that the Lord heard the voice of Elijah, and the life of the child returned to him, and he revived. Elijah took the child down, and brought him down from the upper room into the house and gave him to his mother. And Elijah said, see, your son is alive. Verse 24 is what takes place after this. It says, then the woman said to Elijah, now I know that you are a man of God and that the word of the Lord in your mouth is truth. And that's basically where we ended our class. So she knows without a doubt by the things that she saw that who this God is that Elijah serves, and that the things that he says, that it's true. So that's because he proves who he is. Now, at this point, then we get into where the Lord tells Elijah to go show himself to Ahab. And he says that he's going to send rain on the face of the earth. So there's a question on the lesson. It says, how long have they been without rain? How long was this drought? Okay. So I'm getting two answers, but yes. When you look at the record in 1 Kings, it's going to say 3 years. But I noted there's a couple other verses to look at as well. So 1 Kings 18:1 says, now it came about after many days that the word of the Lord came to Elijah in the third year. So it doesn't necessarily say 3 years, but I see where I understand you answering it that way. So it says, in the third year, saying, go show yourself to Ahab, and I will send rain on the face of the earth. But then when we look in chapter 4 of Luke, it gives more detail. It says, but I say to you in truth, there were many widows in Israel in the days of Elijah, when the sky was shut up for 3 years and 6 months. So it says there that it's 3 years and 6 months. And it's like, well, are we sure? Is this the same? Are we talking about the same thing? And then it goes on to say, when a great famine covered over all the land. Verse 26, and yet Elijah was sent to none of them, but only to Zarephath in the land of Sidon, to a woman who was a widow. And that's what we're talking about here. And we can also see, if you look over in James 15 or James 5, verse 17, the latter part of the verse, it states as well that it did not rain on the earth for 3 years and 6 months. So we get this idea of 3 years and 6 months is about how long this drought was. It's still ongoing. Do you need a lesson, sir? Or did you get one? Okay. But yes, yeah, we see as we're reading this that this is the time is progressing and such, and then like we see in 1 Kings 18, it says the idea of the third year, and then the other verse is stating 3 years and 6 months. So we get a pretty good idea of the amount of time that's taking place here. So the Lord sends Elijah. When we get into chapter 18, the second verse, it says that, so Elijah went to show himself to Ahab. Now the famine was severe in Samaria. Ahab called Obadiah, who was over the household. Now Obadiah feared the Lord greatly. So we're about to learn a little more about Obadiah as it goes into some of these other verses. I put on the lesson, it says, what did Obadiah do when Jezebel destroyed the prophets of the Lord? Okay. He took some away. What did you say, Sally?
He took 100.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. So if you didn't hear Sally, he took 100 prophets by 50s and hid them in a cave and provided bread and water for them. So is that a big risk doing something like that? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, around Jezebel it is. So this is a big risk, but think about it. You know, if Obadiah would have been caught doing this, we know that he could have been executed or anything could happen. Definitely wouldn't be anything good. But we see what he does, though. There was something that was more important to him. So we see what his actions are. In verse 3, it says that he feared the Lord greatly. And also there's a footnote that says that this fear was a reverence for the Lord. It says, revered the Lord greatly. And we can see this also in the way that he speaks to Elijah. Look at 1 Kings 18:7. In 1 Kings 18:7, the latter half, it says that, well, it's talking about that Obadiah was on his way, and behold, Elijah met him, and Obadiah recognizes him. And lost my spot.
Yeah.
Ah, there it is. Okay. And like I said, Obadiah recognized him. And then it says, behold, Elijah met him and he recognized him. And he fell on his face and said, is this you, Elijah, my master? So we see this respect he shows for him because of who he was or what he was. And just like what we saw, what he did with the prophets of God, trying to save them. So then we have verse 8. It says, he said to him, it is I, that's Elijah responding, say to your master, behold, Elijah is here. He said, what sin have I committed that you are giving your servant into the hand of Ahab to put me to death? As the Lord your God lives, there is no nation or kingdom where my master has not sent to search for you. And when they said, he is not here, he made the kingdom or nation swear that they could not find you. And now you are saying, go, say to your master, behold, Elijah is here. It will come about when I leave you that the Spirit of the Lord will carry you where I do not know. So when I come, tell Ahab, and he cannot find you, he will kill me. Although your servant have feared the Lord, although I, your servant, have feared the Lord from my youth. So again, we see that he fears and reveres the Lord, and he has been doing this from his youth. And has it not been told to you or to my master what I did when Jezebel killed the prophets of the Lord, that I hid 100 prophets of the Lord by 50s in a cave and provided them with food and water? But Elijah assures him that he's going to show himself. You know, Obadiah is scared, but Elijah assures him, no, I'm going to show myself. He says, the Lord of hosts lives before whom I stand. I will surely show myself to him today. So Obadiah went to meet Ahab and told him, and Ahab went to meet Elijah. So after Ahab goes to meet Elijah, I put on the lesson, what does Ahab call Elijah? Elijah. Yes, troubler of Israel. But in this sense, who is the true troubler? Okay, Ahab was. Because in verse 18 he says, and he said, I have not troubled Israel, but you and your father's house have, because you have forsaken the commandments of the Lord and you have followed the Baals. And we see in verse 19 something that's about to take place. Elijah tells the people, he says, now send and gather to me all Israel at Mount Carmel, together with 450 prophets of Baal and 400 prophets of the Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table. And I'm going along here, so if y'all have any, just stop me. I'm going to keep going. But if you have any thoughts or questions, just give my attention. We're going to see why he's calling to have all of these 450 prophets of Baal and these other prophets. In this section, what does Elijah ask the people? What's he trying to get them to do? Okay.
He's asking them, how long were you hesitating to obtain? Why you got to be so double-minded?
Okay, yeah, make a decision or something.
It's interesting to look back, though. He talks about, at the end of chapter 17, he talks about the death of the son of the man who built Jericho, according to Joshua, son of Nun. Joshua said, "Choose you this day who you serve."
Right.
And here we go. Choose this. It's nearly the same situation again. Choose who you're
going to
serve.
Right, and in this case, it's going to show who they should be serving and why they should be serving them. So, what are these two opinions that he's calling it, or who is he comparing? He's comparing God and Baal, right? So he's trying to see who is going to really show that they are a god. Because, again, we've had this issue of this idolatry and different things that they are serving. And so here, that's what he's calling them to make a choice and to see who really is God. So, in verse 21... It says, if the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, follow him. But the people did not answer him a word. So again, and I put on the lesson, how are they going to determine who is God? How are they going to determine which one is worthy of following and worshiping?
Who has the most problems?
Well, that might be their answer, but that's not how they're going to determine who needs to be followed. Yes. Go ahead, Miss Linda. Yes, exactly. Because as we, well, I know y'all all read it, but as we look over this some more, I mean, it's sad. So they would determine this by this sacrifice that they're setting up. And the people even agreed that this was going to be a good idea. So they're going to set up this sacrifice, and then whoever's God answers, you know, is basically going to show who's God. So in verse 23... Let's read 23 following. It says, "Now let them give us two oxen, and let them choose one ox for themselves, and cut it up, and place it on the wood, but put no fire under it. And I will prepare the other ox, and lay it on the wood, and I will not put fire under it. Then you call on the name of your God, and I will call on the name of the Lord. And the God who answers by fire, he is God." And all the people said, "That's a good idea." So Elijah said to the prophet of Baal, "Choose one ox for yourselves and prepare it first, for you are many, and call on the name of your God, but put no fire under it." So That's the whole thing that's going to take place here. The true God is going to provide the fire. Then they took the ox which was given them, and they prepared it and called on the name of Baal from morning until noon, saying, "O Baal, answer us." But there was no voice, and no one answered. And they leaped about the altar which they made. It came about at noon that Elijah mocked them and said, "Call out with a loud voice, for he is a god. Either he is occupied or gone aside or is on a journey, or perhaps he is asleep and needs to be awakened." So they cried with a loud voice and cut themselves according to their customs with swords and lances until the blood gushed out on them. Midday comes. It says, when midday was passed, they raved until the time of the offering. of the evening sacrifice, but there was no voice. No one answered. No one paid attention. All this time passes. And you had all these prophets of Baal. Yet Baal doesn't answer. No answer. So now it's Elijah's turn. So verse 30 says, "Then Elijah said to all the people, 'Come near to me.' So all the people came near to him, and he repaired the altar of the Lord, which had been torn down. Elijah took 12 stones, according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Jacob, whom the word of the Lord had come, saying, 'Israel shall be your name.' So with the stones he built an altar in the name of the Lord, and he made a trench around the altar, large enough to hold 2 measures of seed." Just a quick side note, you might have a footnote on that. And this says that one of these equals approximately 11 quarts. So 2, if I'm understanding this correctly, we're talking about 22 quarts. So then it says, verse 33, "Then he arranged the wood and cut the ox in pieces and laid it on the wood. And he said, 'Fill our pitcher, or fill 4 pitchers with water and pour it on the burnt offering and on the wood.' And he said, 'Do it a second time.' And they did it a second time. And he said, 'Do it a third time.' And they did it a third time." So they used 4 pitchers of water 3 different times. So just, we want to build on this idea. This thing is getting wet. It's got a good trench around it. So the water flowed around the altar, and he also filled the trench with water. Just a question for thought when we're reading all of this. The whole idea is, you know, this God is going to, he's going to provide the fire. These prophets of Baal have been doing this for a very long time. Nothing happens. Well, Elijah, he's starting to do it. Not only does he have the offering there, but he's adding water onto it. He's adding water around it. Would you normally drench something you want to burn? No. So this says something about Elijah's confidence. He knows that he knows the outcome. This isn't going to be anything that's going to be an obstacle. It's not going to be a problem. He has no doubt. So that's not going to stop God. Verse 36 says, "At the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice, Elijah the prophet came near and said, 'O Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, today let it be known that you are God in Israel, and that I am your servant, and I have done all these things at your word.'" So again, we see this idea that proving who he is, and that Elijah is his prophet, his servant. And we're going to note here, Elijah's not going to do this all this long period of time or all these different times. It says, "Answer me, O Lord, answer me, that this people may know that you, O Lord, are God, and that you have turned their heart back again. Then the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt offering and the wood and the stones and the dust and licked up the water that was in the trench." So not only was fire provided, I mean, it consumed everything. But like we said, there wasn't a doubt that was going to take place. Elijah knew that God was going to prevail. So we have this that takes place. And let's see, I asked a question, what was the outcome? So were the people convinced?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so the people were convinced. It said that when all the people saw this, they fell on their faces and they said, "The Lord, He is God. The Lord, He is God." That was verse 39. So what happened to these prophets of Baal after all this took place? Say it again, Alex. Okay, so they're struck down. Elijah told the people to seize them and not to let one of them escape. So they seize all of them. And Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and slew them there. So we saw that in verse 40. So all of these prophets were slain there. Pardon me. So after all this takes place, it says, "Now Elijah said to Ahab, 'Go up, eat and drink, for there is the sound of the roar of a heavy shower.'" So Ahab went up to eat and drink, but Elijah went up to the top of Carmel, and he crouched down on the earth and put his face between his knees. He said to the servant, "Go up now, look toward the sea." So he went up and looked and said, "There's nothing." He said, "Go back seven times." It came about at the seventh time that he said, "Behold, a cloud as small as a man's hand is coming up from the sea." And he said, "Go up and say to Ahab, 'Prepare your chariot and go down so that the heavy shower does not stop you.' In a little while, the sky grew black and the clouds and wind, and there was a heavy shower. And Ahab rode and went to Jezreel. Then the hand of the Lord was on Elijah, and he girded up his loins and outran Ahab to Jezreel." So it finally rains, and we see the end of this drought. And then in chapter 19, we're going to see that Ahab tells Jezebel about what took place. In 19:1, it says, "Now Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword." So at this point, now we see that Jezebel sends a message. And so what is this message? What does she tell him? Yeah. So did you say something, Linda?
Not tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so she says, "So may the gods do to me and even more if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time." So we see by what she says, she seems to believe in these gods, or at least she's dedicated to them. But so basically she threatens him. And what does that cause in Elijah?
Fear.
Okay. It caused fear. The text says that he was afraid and arose and ran for his life. Let's remember. Yes, sir.
There's no doubt that God
Right.
She is so anti-God. She hates God so much that that's why she's against him.
Well,
not that she believes in her, it's overwhelming.
Right.
But she hates God so much that she's willing, that she doesn't want to accept the facts.
Right. So we still have people that are still doing the idolatry in these times, even though the evidence is overwhelming. And it says here, I mean, we read about how wicked a woman she was too. We think about this, what already had taken place. Let me see here. Because we have what we just read about not too long ago about what she did to the prophets of God. So we see how she was there. We're going to see in the future, and once we get into chapter 21, we're going to see what she does concerning Naboth. And she's a wicked, evil woman. And Elijah, he's convinced. This scares him, and he's convinced that she wants him dead. That's for sure. So we see that Elijah wants to die. In verse 4 of chapter 19. Okay, it says, but he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a juniper tree. And he requested for himself that he might die and said, it is enough. Now, O Lord, take my life, for I am no better than my fathers. He lay down and slept under a juniper tree. And behold, there was an angel touching him. And he said to him, arise, eat. Then he looked and behold, there was at his head a bread cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. So he ate and drank, and then he lays down again. The angel of the Lord came again a second time and touched him and said, arise, eat, because the journey is too great for you. How long is this journey going to take? Okay. So it's going to take 40 days and 40 nights. And in the Lord asks Elijah what he's doing there. It says in verse 9, then he came there to a cave and lodged there. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, and he said to him, what are you doing here? So the word of the Lord came to him and said, what are you doing here? And he said, I've been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the sons of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, torn down thine altars, and killed thy prophets with the sword. And I alone am left, and they seek my life to take it away. So he's told to stand on the mountain before the Lord. And then we're going to see that he describes some things, describes what he sees. So he said, go forth and stand on the mountain before the Lord. And behold, the Lord was passing by. And a great and strong wind was rending the mountains and breaking in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a sound of a gentle blowing. And it came about when Elijah heard it, that he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood in the entrance of the cave. And behold, a voice came to him and said, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" You about to buzz me, Michael? Okay. So, Elijah's in the presence of the Lord. Verse 11 states that he was passing by. And it describes these things that he saw. The strong wind that was breaking up the mountain before the Lord. But it keeps noting, but he was not in the wind. And then it states about the earthquake, but he was not in the earthquake. And a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. So I think it's the idea there's not a physical form, but you see these taking place, and it states that he was in the presence of the Lord. And then you get to this gentle blowing. When Elijah heard it, he hid his face. And that is, he wrapped his face in his mantle, it says, and went out and stood in the entrance of the cave. And then the Lord speaks to him. Not like in verse 9, where it says that the word of the Lord came to him, but behold, it said, behold, a voice came to him and said, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" And it's time to stop here, so we'll pick up here in the next class. But I appreciate y'all's comments and good attention.